I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 16 years from today, Greg Gerstner will finally land the perfect cannonball. Epic splash. Unsuspecting friends. A work of art only possible because Greg is already meeting all these same people at AARP volunteer and community events that keep him active and involved and help make sure his happiness lives as long as he does. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/local.
In a world of dry eye, there's a long-lasting solution that can save the day. Presenting Sustain Complete Preservative Free. Its unique formula gives 8 hours of relief from the common symptoms of dry eye. Sustain Complete. Open your eyes to lasting relief.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Well, if you're driving about town, listening on 93.3, thanks a lot for doing that. Appreciate you. Be safe. Get to where you're going. Deliver those packages. Pick up that thing, whatever it might be. Keep us on. If you're listening on and or watching War Chant TV on YouTube, thanks for doing that as well. Make sure you get your subscription to YouTube, War Chant TV, warchant.com, all those good things immediately if you don't already have one. And if you're listening and watching in the Heisen Legal Law Firm chat and chatting away, hey, man, good to have you on board. Appreciate you doing all of those things. Ira Shafel, I think, set to join us from Omaha. We'll be able to track him down. I think, Tom, you were just checking. Yep, we're good to go there.
We are good to go. He will be via phone today as he's exploring a little bit of Omaha on an off day. Florida State made Link Jarrett and a lot of players available yesterday, so it looks like from the media perspective, FSU is going to hunker down, do their own thing, and then be prepared to play some baseball tomorrow, and hopefully they'll be playing subsequent days after that.
Yeah, I thought Link handled the situation afterwards as well as you could. I think has to be bitterly disappointed with the opportunity that was lost in that game. Obviously, you don't lose a game like that without regret and without second-guessing certain aspects, but same time, he had to be thrilled by the response. You know, he believed that this team was mentally tough, said that going into the postseason. He thought they were mentally prepared going into the postseason to have a good run in them, to play well and give themselves opportunities. I don't think that he would second guess that now, because as I said before, going back to first regional and then the Supers and then your 2 games out in Omaha, Florida State's been good, man. They've played a bunch of good teams and they're 5-1 in those games. And ultimately you can't make a series of errors and mistakes that cost you dearly, give extra at bats. Yes, he would have liked to have had the strike called, but I think there are a lot of things that probably frustrated him about that first game, but he has to be very pleased that yet again they were buttoned up and as good as they could be in that game against Virginia yesterday. So it's nice to see them still kicking around. And by the way, if you're watching college baseball still, Florida and NC State have just started. You got a game again tonight. Do you find yourself watching the other games, Tom? Last year at this time, you didn't watch a single College World Series game. I understand why. But do you find yourself watching the other games now?
A little bit more, although Friday was difficult. So I found myself watching a little bit more of the U.S. Open on Saturday than college baseball. But I found my way towards the end because the drama was just so outstanding. We first guessed it. That this is going to be a highly rated College World Series. And
oh, it's been good, man.
If you tuned into it, you were captivated and did not tune away from it, especially the first 2 days of action. Yesterday was a little bit more ho-hum, although Virginia had pushed us to the brink. But those first 2 days on television, I'm sure those numbers are outstanding for the College World Series. So long story short, I watched more of the golf by far over the weekend than College World Series. But I found my way on Saturday to seeing those finishes.
Pinehurst gave us what we wanted, and that played like a true U.S. Open, which I was happy about. Not happy about the ending. You got what you wanted coming down the stretch there where guys got to execute shots. None of them did. But there you were, time and again, as you were watching the course take its toll. Those ratings will be good, too. The reason for college baseball's ratings are because the level of play. Now, our game, oddly excluded in this conversation, our first game. But most of the baseball has been awesome. Our game had immense and intense drama in moments where the baseball was good, but it was a largely sloppy game compared to the other games we've seen. And the other games we've seen, it's more resembled. This is not a knock on us or even Tennessee. It's just the situations. But I do feel like it's resembled a little bit more of pro baseball in a way that it really never has. And that would stand to reason because more of the better players coming out of high school are going to play college baseball. And we are seeing that now. And the ones who filtered through the smaller schools that don't initially get those offers to an LSU, to a Florida, to a Florida State, to a Texas or one of the big schools – Those players, if they emerge from a smaller school, are now getting plucked by all of those said name schools. And so these rosters are loaded. And once they shrunk the rounds of the Major League Baseball draft, and this became a viable option for kids to go play a very high level of baseball that could be scouted in a way that allowed them to compare and contrast what plays and doesn't play at the next level because the level of competition was so much better. Then the sport itself improved. And I will say, I do think that, you know, look, for years and years, we've complained about college umpires. I thought the umpire yesterday in the Florida State Virginia game was outstanding. When he got hit in the neck, I was so pissed because I thought, oh, great, here we're waiting on this strike. We need this strike. And the guy that's been the most consistent of any umpire I've seen in the entirety of the College World Series has just been hit in the effing neck and may need medical attention, and we're going to have some other slappy have to get back there, and then the very pitch that would have been called strike three is going to be called a ball, and then you start going through the machinations in your mind because you are a Florida State baseball fan, and you've been on the wrong end of the most improbable BS that's ever occurred to any team in the history of the sport, and so you could go ahead and create in your mind, like I did, a scenario where this seemingly innocuous thing like a foul ball off the equipment of an umpire is going to cost you a game you've dominated. But that's where I went. I went down that road, and that dark, dark traveler was with me, that one that breeds doubt and nonsense and ridiculousness. It was all there in a moment, and then that tough SOB said, I'm good. I'm good to get back behind the plate. And I went, you, sir, are a badass, and I feel better for having done so.
Well, he could have called the next pitch, the first one after he got jacked up a strike. But
the man couldn't breathe.
That first pitch after 15 minutes, I'm thinking, there you it's outside. I do love the umpire who will declare verbally for everyone.
Where it was.
That's somebody who is confident in his strike zone and is confident in what he sees. He's not wishy-washy. He's not thinking about it. He's definitive. And whether or not he's right, it makes you feel better because he's definitive in what he believes. And I thought so. He was far better than Friday's umpire, who was, I think, equally bad to both teams. Mm-hmm. Would love to have the fifth inning back in general. The fifth inning was so heavily skewed towards Tennessee in every 50-50 call. But yesterday's guy was pretty good. And that jaw is unbelievable because there's no padding there for a double deflector to go hit you in the chin. That dude could play hockey.
He's a tough dude. He was in good shape, had a real strike zone that he stuck by, was declarative after every pitch, as you noted. That's what it should look like. That's the best you can hope for in college baseball right there, that guy yesterday. If it was on the corner, it was a strike. It wasn't a ball, it was a strike if it was on the corner. If it was just off the corner, it was a ball, and he would yell, ball away. He would tell you right then and there why it was. No second guessing, even if you didn't like it. That's what you want. But yeah, man, over the years, and you know, we did the watch along together, and the way that ended, I believe my last words were F, and then I turned off the computer. My wife said, you seem almost like you expected that to happen. And I said, babe, it's Florida State baseball. I mean, I have seen the craziest things ever happen to this team, to where you run the risk of whining. Like I try to cure myself, so I don't do it as often, and I try to avoid being around it. Like I remember one time Brett Grove stealing second base out in Omaha, being safe by no less than 3 feet, was on his way to popping up at second base because his foot was firmly up against the bag when he was tagged and called out, which turned out to be a pivotal play. I remember in Omaha a wild pitch when we had a runner at third that hit at the old Rosenblatt, a brick, and fired the ball straight back to the catcher's glove hand. The announcer noted that he'd never seen it in the history of the event, which got our guy tagged out. I've seen a lot of stuff. Foul balls by a quarter of an inch. All these things that have conspired at times to ratchet up the level of pain and despair that we feel. It felt like it culminated in that moment against Tennessee. Now, the rational side of me realized that, look, man, this is the things that plagued Florida State all year reared their ugly head out there in that game. So I don't know that I was totally stunned. But I did eagerly await to see how they would play yesterday. I was hopeful, but I'm not sure I thought they would have that tough a chin. And really, they were led by a guy in Dorsey, and that's why the mantra is, and the old saying is, you're only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. Look, I'm sure there was a bit of a loser's fog in their mind after that devastating loss, but man, he erased it because he went out and dominated early and let the rest of that lineup know, we're good, man. Hang in there. Get your sea legs about you. I'm throwing strikes. We're going to be all right. This isn't too much for me to handle. He looked spectacular to Dorsey.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, you look at the final score and you say, how did we get to 7 runs? It's not like we scored 7 in the first. You know, Dorsey had to put up 0 after 0 after 0 when the game was still within touch. And it's not like, you know, we have an early lead, we get up 2-0, and then we end up pouring it on. But in those moments, where if for some reason, you know, Virginia scratches across 2 and you're either down 2-1 or it's a tie ball game through 3 or 4 innings, that's when that Friday-ness, that Friday fog sets back in on a Sunday. And he just didn't let that happen. Mm-mm. And so if we do go the distance, if we have a unbelievable week where you get to reset and that one on the right side of the dash is erased and you get to a best 2 out of 3, thank that kid. Thank that freaking kid, because he was the one that helped settle us down.
Fascinating, too. He's been the more consistent of the two in the biggest games in the postseason. And, you know, I that's not a shot. I mean, I really enjoyed our conversation with Jamie, and I think his long-term prognosis is really, really good. But Carson Dorsey's the one who's taken the massive leap forward to be the most dependable pitcher on the staff in these games. He's been electrifying. And part of that is that he has been able to throw his fastball up with the late life. He's thrown the slider away. He's got that changeup too that he occasionally goes to. I've just been impressed. I like too the demeanor on the hill. One thing that you can note with him, when he strikes somebody out in a big situation, look at his face. It's that of a man who expected to do exactly what he just did. I love it every time I see it. It is a cool, calm, yeah, this was always going to be the case demeanor.
Yeah, I think what we talked about during the live show on Friday, the watch along, about what was going wrong for Jamie. There were two things that were principally going wrong. One of them was he couldn't locate his fastball to the right handers the way he wanted to. He found his slider long before he found his fastball, especially to right-handed hitters. And then also he wouldn't expand and get out of the zone to put away hitters. That was one of the problems. And Dorsey does. That fastball isn't electric the way that Jamie Arnold's is. It's 92, right. 93. But how often did he go right to the collarbone or above the lettering at the chest? Often he did.
Well, yeah, it's an out pitch, yeah.
And that's how he got swings and misses with stuff that's not as explosive, whereas Jamie was always in the zone. Now, that's, again, he's got a cut on his finger that's, I'm sure, affecting things from a pinpoint command standpoint. Also, Tennessee's lineup is better than Virginia's lineup. I mean, I think we can all say that, too.
So that Tennessee lineup is really filthy. I mean, they have a lot of guys with bat-to-ball skills.
Correct. So, like, what Jamie Arnold has done so far in the postseason has a higher degree of difficulty, but Carson Dorsey's had a higher degree of consistency to get us to this point.
Well, he's just located his stuff early. The first pitch yesterday is a strike down the heart. It's like he's establishing right here, right now, no, I'm not nervous. Here's strike one, here's strike two. We're playing baseball. Let's go. I got all this, and I'm going to throw a slider off of it. There's really not a lot you're going to be able to do with that, especially if that starts landing for a strike. And then he just kind of pitched accordingly as if to say, oh, yeah, I'm good. He had a couple of moments where he had to second guess it because he got a little wild. Micah came out and spoke to him, but he was fine after that. You know, he got the necessary out, or he got lucky at one point. He had an Adam ball that helped him out too. But, I mean, that's pitching, right? That's getting back on the horse. So, very impressive. It's Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. We'll bring in Irash Fell in a moment. Hey, Seminoles, we all know how important it is to score in the red zone, but are you prepared for success in the retirement red zone? 5 years leading up to your retirement date and the immediate 5 years after are a critical time of thoughtful planning for you and your family. And our friend and fellow Knoll, Adam Tolliver, and his team at Artisan Financial Strategies are prepared to coach you to victory. Some of us, well, we're at midfield and want to plan ahead. Others are ready to punch it in on the goal line. Whether making sure you know how much you can spend without running out of money, protecting yourself and your family against rising healthcare costs, or carefully planning your legacy, the Artisan team brings a combined 30-plus years of planning experience and world-class resources to help you navigate the way. For more information, just head over to KnollRetirement.com. Now, that's one word, KnollRetirement.com. Joining us now all the way from Omaha is our own Irash Fell, WarChant.com, joining us now. Ira, how are you, brother?
I'm great, Jeff. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm glad you got to see a win. You got to see a hell of a bounce-back performance from a team that had to have been devastated by a most unfortunate turn of events in Game 1. Give me your summary so far of Omaha, Nebraska, and what you've seen out there at the College World Series. Obviously, we know the play. They're 1-1. We'll talk more about the games themselves, but has the event done what it usually does, which is live up to the hype?
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. The crowds have been awesome. The games have been awesome with four straight one-run games, three walk-offs. One of those was not a lot of fun for FSU fans, obviously, or the players. But like you said, I mean, yesterday was a real good cleanser, I think, because, that team, being around them some on Saturday, being around the coaching staff, I mean, devastated doesn't seem like it does enough justice. I mean, they had their hearts ripped out. Not just because of the loss, but because you know how it changes the whole tournament. And so, give them a lot of credit, obviously. Everybody will and everybody should, because, they came back out yesterday morning and just played what Blake Harrison might have been the best game of the season. And when he said that, it kind of shook me a little bit, because I hadn't really thought about it. But then you look back at it, yeah, man. I mean, Dorsey shoved. Oxford pitched well in relief. Defense was very good. There's one play maybe they could have made that they didn't. But other than that, just a great baseball game against a good team. Virginia is a really good baseball team, and Florida State kind of dominated them. And so, yeah, it's just cool to see them at least have that moment to kind of maybe cleanse some of what happened on Friday.
I was really excited for them to have that moment because we think that they're a team that deserves that moment. They've been tough. They've bounced back from all kinds of adversity. And to see it have it play out the way that it did in game one, I was frustrated and worried that they wouldn't get a chance to show their best version because it would be understandable to not be able to break out from the fog of defeat and the sadness that is really, I think, part of a loss like that, right? It's not just a loss. It was the way that it happened that had to, you know, a lot of times carry over. But Carson Dorsey, you just mentioned it. He's been their best pitcher in the postseason. He has been spectacular, and he looked calm from the jump yesterday, Ira.
He really has. It's a fun story. I'm actually finishing a story up that I'll have up on the site today at warchant.com about Carson and also about Brendan Oxford, because you know, he obviously came back from something pretty awful the other night as well. But yeah, I mean, Carson Dorsey, less than three months ago, gave up grand slams on back-to-back days.
Yeah.
Clemson. And then in the ACC tournament, really struggled in relief. And I think at some point they realized, partly out of necessity, and sorry, the wind's kicking up here in Omaha, but they realized, you know, he's much more comfortable in a starting role than he is as a reliever. And since they've done that, he's had a bunch of really good starts, and then especially in the postseason where he's been outstanding. In these three starts in the NCAA tournament now, he's pitched 21 innings and given up 5 earned runs. And he's just been outstanding. And again, like you said, not just that he pitched well yesterday, but to me, one of the most impressive things was he got some traffic. You know, part of it was self-induced. You know, he walked a guy, hit a guy. You know, got in a couple situations where Virginia had a couple runners on and got out of every inning, picked off a batter, just really controlled the game in a way that was very impressive on that stage. So, yeah, really happy for him, man. He has been, I agree, he's been their best pitcher the last few weeks.
What are they set to do now? I mean, I guess I don't know if we know. Has it been announced? How are they going to proceed? I mean, it seems highly unlikely, in my opinion, that they'll be able to navigate this to a place where all of a sudden we're watching them on Thursday, but it's not impossible because the offense is so good. How do you think they're going to move forward here on the Hill?
Yeah, we don't know. And Link, when we talked to him yesterday, he basically just said, don't even ask me because I have no idea, which gives you a pretty good indication of where they're at. You know, they don't have a great plan. I think my guess is you go with some of these guys, maybe some of these younger pitchers who have really good stuff, but just, you know, have been inconsistent, and you kind of roll the dice. I just think you do that instead of pitching an older guy who you know what they are. So, you know, I would like to see Abraham, you know, shoot, maybe Holtz too. But, you know, I just think some of those guys that have good stuff when it's on, and then, you know, take your chances with that. I think that's what they'll do against North Carolina. And then, like you said, man, if you could get past North Carolina, I think that game is huge because if you can get past them, and I understand that the Tennessee game coming back will be a huge challenge to beat them. They would have all tons of rest. All their arms would be available. But Tennessee's strength is not their pitching staff. North Carolina's strength is their pitching staff. So if you can get past North Carolina, if you can play any team that doesn't have a great pitching staff, I like your chances. And if they could somehow beat Tennessee in that first game, you could see a path where now all the pressure's on Tennessee. So I'm, you know, compared to where I was 24 hours ago, I'm much more, I see there's a path there to get it done, but obviously the cards are all stacked up against them.
I agree. It could be fun, right? It's one of those, Tom and I talked about it in hour number one. It feels a little bit like the famed Red Sox comeback against the Yankees when they were down 3-0. And, you know, next thing you know, it's 3-1. Don't let us get to Wednesday. Don't let us get to Friday and all that stuff. But I believe if you're still around, and you're able to go back to some of your horses, even if it's on short rest, and that game, if you're in it against Tennessee, if you're playing Tennessee, Tennessee doesn't want to face us. I don't think they do. You saw what this offense can do to Tennessee pitching. And by the way, Tennessee rolled out all of their arms in that game, and a lot of those guys got hit. Florida State would score. I'll just put it that way. Florida State would score against Tennessee, I do believe. But you got to get there, and this is a tough ask.
Yeah, that's to me, that's the challenge. I of the teams like everybody was debating yesterday, who would you rather see? You know, who'd you want to see win that North Carolina-Tennessee game? And honestly, you know, I got the idea of a lot of people would rather play Tennessee once as opposed to playing them twice. North Carolina's going to be a challenge because they do have a lot of good arms. So I don't think the game's going to get away from them. You're not going
right.
to bludgeon them in an elimination game like you do some teams. So I think it's going to be a pretty competitive game. If FSU's pitchers deliver, you know, and again, you don't have to have somebody pitch 7-8 innings. It's going to be a Johnny Holstaff thing, I'm sure, unless somebody just, you know, comes out of nowhere with a great effort. But, you know, I don't think North Carolina's going to score a bunch of runs either. So I think it's going to be a close competitive game. And if you pull it out, now you get into, I think, a game where you're just completely loose if you play Tennessee again. There's no pressure on you at all. And then if you keep that game close, now all of a sudden the pressure starts to mount on Tennessee.
Yeah, you just tab one of the young pitchers, like you said, Ira, and just tell him one piece of advice. Don't pitch to Honeycutt. he's pretty effing good. Go enjoy Omaha. Thanks for checking in, brother.
Thanks, Jeff. See you, man.
Yep, take care. That's Ira Shaffel enjoying himself out in Omaha. Kind enough to give us some time as well as he's walking about on a windy day. I believe NC State currently leads Florida 1-0 as we update you the score there. That's nice to see. Let's hope that balloons to 27-0 in like the next two innings. Wouldn't that be great? That'd be special. Great trip to Omaha for Ira to witness that if it happens. We'll see.
Do you think that this is one thing we didn't talk about with the Clemson-Florida Classic from a couple weeks ago? If you're a manager and you challenge foreign substances on another pitcher, you know, whether it's on his sleeve or in the case of the game itself, brim of the cap, and the umpire finds nothing, should you be ejected as the manager?
If they find nothing?
If they find nothing. Because in the situation that O'Sullivan called for the review of the cap, all he's doing is stalling. We know exactly what he's doing. Yeah. It's the same thing as 11 used to do with an initial visit. Then he would walk back and then he'd come back. I mean, it's a cat and mouse game. But if you're going to try and fluster an opponent directly, this is different than trying to get a bullpen arm warm. That's your own guy that you're trying to get warm. This is an opponent that you're calling into question. You're saying, check his hat. Man, there should be a repercussion. If you're wrong and they're saying it's just dirt, you got to go, man. You got to get kicked out in that situation.
Well, until they do that, managers are going to do exactly what he did if they think it gives them an advantage. That's what they're going to do. And so, yeah, it is annoying. You know, they do have these rules in place. I see Briley's referencing delay of game. The rules in place now are meant to speed up baseball. I could see it being something like that where they say, look, man, you know, you don't deliver a pitch within a certain time, ball one. You know, we already know the rules, right? So same thing. Strike one, or your batter's out, or whatever you want to make it, you know, however penal you want to make it. I could see him doing something like that in the future. But you're right. It's gamesmanship. It's annoying. It's how about that? How about the start of that game, Texas A&M in Florida the other night? It's uncomfortable.
Well,
that's uncomfortable. I'm still laughing about
it. What I would say is, with O'Sullivan specifically, there's a lot of uncomfortable things. So,
yeah, fair enough. I don't think, by the way, to put a ribbon on our conversation with Ira, it seems counterintuitive to say this, but I don't believe it to be. Florida State, even though they are facing elimination, I don't think there's any pressure. You get it right now. The odds are stacked against you. This is why losing that game to Tennessee was so devastating. You had it won. You were up 9-4 in the middle innings. 9-4. That's the lead that pisses me off. I know the ninth inning one, it drives you nuts, drives me nuts. But, man, you're on the cusp of blowing them out, and then obviously we know the series of events. But going back to, they don't recede, Bob. Thanks for the question, buddy. Appreciate you. And they're two different sides of the bracket. They just don't do it. They don't. That's the way it works out in Omaha. It's a strange thing. But I think if you go with the approach that you're going to pitch one of those young guys, and we, Tom, have talked about this, we love a couple in particular of the young guys. We love their stuff. Now, because they're young and they're green, it comes and goes. It's there for a pitch enough to put a twinkle in your eye when you witness it. You go, ooh, that's a two-seamer that runs in on righties and away from lefties. That is going to get it done right there. And then you'll see, you know, a 12-6 curveball, or you'll see a changeup from a right-handed pitcher to a left-handed hitter that is a wonderful out pitch. Or you see these things and you go, okay, they've got stuff that excites you for the future. Problem is, they're not used to pitching. They're not used to being asked to pitch through tough situations. They're going against hitters that are much better than anybody they faced just a year ago when they were in high school. So all of these things add up to inconsistencies when we watch them during the regular season. But those inconsistencies aren't born from somebody not having the pitches or the stuff, as they say, to get people out. It's just the lack of experience, and they're getting set up, and they're a little inconsistent. I would put my arm around one of those kids if that's the route you go and say, man, you got nothing to lose. How cool is it that you're at Florida State and you're pitching in the College World Series? This is so fun. Just let it fly, buddy. And by the way, don't hold anything back. We got the whole staff up and running to come to your aid here. I don't expect you to pitch us a complete game shutout. Go give me one good inning. We'll talk about it afterwards. If that inning was good and you're feeling good, you're feeling froggy, let's go. We'll keep going. If not, we'll go grab somebody else.
That's what they can fall back on. Admittedly, midweek opponents are not the same as weekend opponents. However, you have a whole staff game against Florida where you're unbelievably dominant, and several other examples against teams from the state of Florida in which, I mean, maybe your lead guy pitched two innings, but you used 5, 6, 7 arms in those circumstances.
Right.
And you got home. Tomorrow's situation is perfect for what you describe. Now, I don't know that in a high leverage Wednesday game against Tennessee in the 8th, and you got nobody left, and in comes Hudson Rowan, that you're like, isn't this fun? That
this is awesome, son.
You might not end up with vomit over your uniform because he projectiles onto the FS on your chest. But in tomorrow's circumstance, that's not the same thing. Tomorrow is go get him. Tomorrow is totally go get him energy. Wednesday, Thursday, let's get our guys, the very few that we like, back in there, please. And maybe tomorrow gives us a candidate for Thursday where you're like, all right, Abraham, I see you. We can run you back out there in a better spot.
No, I get it. I'm just talking about tomorrow. I'm not talking later on. I'm just talking about tomorrow. Like, hey, man, you got nothing to lose. And listen, I promise you, if this doesn't go well, we put you in a bad situation. It's not going to change the way I feel about you when I recruited you. It's not going to change the way I feel about your future. It's what it is, man. We're kind of up against it. A lot of things happen. But what a cool opportunity. Throw your stuff, man. Throw your stuff. Don't be scared. It's a big ballpark. Throw what you got. If they tank it, if it happens, it happens. But give it a go, man. I trust you. It's Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. What do you think, Tommy? Was it 2.5 and 3.5 feet? Is that what it was, the two putts for Rory?
It was
3 feet, 11 inches, one of them, 2.5 the other?
2.5, 2 feet, 6 inches, and just like 3.9 for the one on 18, which I will say,
that's a slippery putt. That's a slippery putt, that one.
Whoever was on the bag that or was on the call was like, oh, this is left center, left edge at most. No, man, just watching that putt. That's
a full ball on the left side.
Unless you want to bury it 20 feet past, if you miss, it's not left center. But the 2 foot, I mean, come on.
Well, no, that's the one. That's the one that allowed for the other.
Ooh.
And it's the one that will allow for others in the future. I don't think you ever get over it. Scott Hoke. I don't know what you do in that situation. Like, you knew, oddly, after that miss, I said to Christy, he's got no chance to make this putt on 18. after the miss, I'm like, he's got no chance.
Yeah. So they said, you know, it's funny. They're talking about it on the broadcast the whole day. They're like, well, he made that one look easy. I'm like, did he? Because all you're talking about all day long is the Payne Stewart flag location. First of all, Payne Stewart this, the Payne Stewart that. And if you land on the front of the green, you have an uphill putt.
Right.
So he went beyond it. I mean, he made that look easy. I'm like, I'm not so sure. He's got a downhiller.
This is where Chambly kicked ass. He interrupted them both to basically tell them they were dumb. He's like, well, that's not where you want to be. That's downhill and slippery. He immediately interjected that. It was like, that's not a good situation.
So there, I'm finding something out about NBC's broadcasts, and I'm sure everybody is wanting to know this particular opinion. But Dan Hicks is probably the problem, the play-by-play guy. No broadcast team steps over each other on the commentary more than NBC. And Johnny Miller's gone, and Gary Koch is history, and Paul Azinger is gone, and all these – Peter Jacobson. Like they've run through a ton of dudes, and yet they still all don't know when it's each other's turn to speak, which CBS does so cleanly at all times, and NBC does not. So Dan Hicks, I guess, is the problem, or the director in the truck if it's been the same guy. At any rate, the reason I bring that up is it was contentious. You know, Brandel Chambly could not be criticizing Bryson DeChambeau more down the stretch, and Dan Hicks could not have been a better impersonator of Gary Danielson and Tim Tebow more for Bryson down the stretch.
Well, I think what happens is they are in a bad situation in that, and the whole thing, it's like you can watch the disingenuous absurdity that is Bryson DeChambeau's effort to reclimate his image. Oh, it's uncomfortable and maniacal and sociopathic, and so you get those that are easily fooled in buying in, and then those that are appalled by their naivete. And so when you hear it, it's uncomfortable because they're jousting for what to say, how to say it, how to present it without crossing a line on either side. So they're stuck. They don't know what to do. Meanwhile, I mean, the guy's going to win the tournament, and you got to give him his due for winning the tournament. So how do you do it without fawning and buying into the charade?
Well,
or how do you do it? Well, also pointing out that this is absurd. Like I said to you last night, it'd be one thing. Both those guys puked all over themselves down the stretch. And so that's what made it weird. The course actually won. The moment won, because if he had just taken it by going and playing great, like he had in the previous major, you'd have been going, well, I mean, dude's just ready to play these things. But he shot over par in the final five holes. He didn't go take it.
Right, and he won after shooting over par. Rory was up two, and I mean, Rory's up two with like five, six holes to go. That's like straight out of the Arnold Palmer 19, what, with the Masters, I forget what year it was, 66, 67. He's got like a handful shot lead going into the final round and blows it.
And you're like, what in the world?
And it's not sometimes, use basketball as an example. Sometimes the rally, the run to get up by a basket takes everything out of you and you don't have anything left. And so you cave after you climb the mountain because you're exhausted. It's not like Rory was playing poorly and putting himself in a position where he's got 50 footers for par.
Right.
He's right there. And he got out of it. He had the bad mistake on 18. This is the hard part. Is earlier on in the round, they talked about how Rory hit a quick shot ahead of Bryson so that the crowd would erupt before Bryson could tee off or do whatever he was going to do. He wanted to use the elements to influence Bryson. Well, Bryson on 17, his tee shot, influenced Rory. I'm telling you, if Rory McIlroy tees off on 18 before Bryson hits his shot to the par 3 17th, Rory's in the fairway. He got intimidated by how closely Bryson hit it. And you could tell that Rory was nervous 2 hours before we ever got to a key moment, because he would check his line, pick his head up, put it down like Brian Harmon doing a waggle out of nowhere. The moment was too big. It just was.
Weird,
it's so sad. It's so stinking sad, because many moments have been high stakes just like that. And he has not flustered, but he was totally, totally flustered yesterday.
Well, I think it's odd. It's once he got up by two strokes with five to play. It's like he has the thing won and he knows it. It's almost like that. One of the cool things, and this is in any sport, and over the years, get a chance to talk to people in this situation. I think it's fascinating. I bring it up a lot. Dr. Brett McCabe has been on the show that I used to host with Trey Jones on SiriusXM PGA Tour Channel. was a former college baseball player, pitcher in the College World Series at LSU, had success, worked with Alabama and Nick Saban, worked with all of these folks. And he would talk about, and he's a sports, the reason I bring him up, he's a sports psychologist. And he would talk about, you know, circumstances in any sport. The number one thing that you have to try to avoid, it's not the awareness that you're on the cusp of achieving a goal. It's not the awareness that you have an opportunity to achieve something that you desperately want to achieve. It's the thinking about what it means. It's the picturing of it before you hit the next shot or play the next play or whatever it is. It's not like they're not devoid of an understanding when they take the turn at nine and look up, I'm up three with nine to play. Like, I know what that means, that if I play good golf, I'm a winner. But like, it's not being aware of that. It's starting to picture it as having been a fait accompli, like it's going to happen. And I feel like the instant he, just looking at his face, and I don't know this, I'm not in his brain, nobody really knows it, but it's an observation. He goes up two, and they were running out of holes on a hard course with Sunday pins. You can see a scenario by which he says in his head, if I par out, I'm the U.S. Open champion. Finally, 10 years removed, I will have done this thing. And you know how much he's wanted it if you've watched Full Swing. So I feel like he did it. And then the first thing that called that into question, that shattered the image, it was just like you could picture the puke coming out all over his chest. Just like unbelievable this is happening.
But you're right. His competitor was puking as well. And I'm of the belief that if he makes the putt on 18, Bryson does not save par.
I am of the belief too. But it doesn't matter because he missed it. And so what's ended up happening there, if that had been that you had to do that in order to force a playoff as opposed to win, it's a very different mindset.
Yeah. No, it's, we talked about this years and years ago with Dustin Hopkins, North Carolina kick and then the Clemson kick.
Right.
Two very different scenarios.
You're tied. You're not going to lose the game if you miss the kick.
Right. And that's why he was able to hit the 55-yarder is 70 yards. And that's why the 38-yarder against North Carolina went wide to the right.
Because you needed to make that or you lose.
But in that instance, that helped, you know, fortify his strength and put, he's still kicking in the league. So
it's amazing.
It ends up working out for him. But those are two very different circumstances. Yeah, I think if Bryson has to make par to force a playoff there, I don't think he does, just because he was in the jail of jails.
And well, yeah,
he knows if I bogey, we're going to a playoff. There is no pressure at that point. It's like, let's see what I can do when I'm 50 yards out instead of, oh my God, I'm going to lose this. I'm going to blow this.
It's a very different approach. Yeah. No, the psychology of all of that, watching all these guys down the stretch was amazing. I the U.S. Open brings that out more than most because the conditions are so tough. So your margin for error is so great. It's so little, and the repercussions so great. Yeah. It was riveting. There's no doubt about that. Well, ratings going to be good. It was riveting.
The guy who hit the most winning shots was Cantlay. You're talking about the second shots, the approaches from the fairway, or the tee shots on the par threes. Cantlay hit the most, amazing shots yesterday of all of them. They all took turns, but Patrick hit the most, but he couldn't make a putt. So standing saying, I was out of this thing 5 holes ago, but I'm now back in this with 2 holes to play. These guys are ridiculous.
Well, Cantlay has the same problem that Finau has, is that they're really good golfers who hit a bunch of really good shots and don't make putts when they need to make putts in majors. It's like, okay, you there's no questioning your ball striking ability and your ability to hit big shots with a lot on the line to hit a green in tough situations, but you got to pay it off. And it did live up to what I wanted to see, and I had a good time with it, so it was a lot of fun. But you know, I think the sad part is I don't think that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. It doesn't feel like Rory's ever going to recover from that.
Probably not.
Unless he runs away with one. Like, if he runs away with it, like, you could see one of the best ways to get over something like that is what if you just are on fire like he was in the one U.S. Open or the British Open. It was the British one. Yeah. Well, he was U.S. Open. Yeah, he ran away with it.
right after a crushing defeat. That's where I would pause. That's where I don't think he will, but you know, you had the same look in his eye. He had the same look in his eye in the scorer's room yesterday that he did on the 10th tee at Augusta on Sunday.
But the difference was that the Masters, he just started hitting it all over the lot. He's hitting it in places nobody had ever seen before. Like, that was literally a guy losing his swing on the course. This is a little different. He hit the ball really well for the most part. He really did. For four rounds, he did everything he needed to do. And he missed a 2.5-foot
putt. And then, well, and think about it. Last year, he was one stroke short of Wyndham Clark. And, you know, what he's saying to himself on the flight, because you're going to deflect in that moment as a defense mechanism, is, you know, Wyndham choked more than I did. It's just that LA Country Club had a 150-yard wide fairway on the 72nd.
Oh,
I missed by 5 feet to the left. I'm in the native area.
It'll hurt your feelings. We got probables. I'm not even going to play the music. I should probably hit the thing, though, shouldn't I? By the way, did Kegleyon go yard again? I think he did, Tom. I think my man went yard again. I don't mean again as in this same game, but he did it in this game, right? That's how Florida got up 4-1. I believe that's correct.
Wow, look at that. They're up 4-1. No, I didn't see. I've been paying attention to the show. I haven't checked the box scores.
I'm proud of you, but it was Kegleyon went yard because you can't pitch to him. Stop doing that, dummies. All right, here we go, quickly. Reds, Pirates, Carson Spears, Paul Skeens. It's Paul Skeens Day, everybody. Woohoo! Paul Skeens Day on a Monday. Padres, Phillies, Randy Vasquez, Christopher Sanchez, Cards, Marlins, Sonny Gray, Braxton Garrett, Red Sox, Blue Jays, Nick Pavetta, Yusei Kikuchi. By the way, the Red Sox stole 9 bases on the Yankees' pathetic catcher last night. Tigers, Braves, Reese Olson, Max Fried, Mets, Rangers, David Peterson, John Gray, Giants, Cubs, Jordan Hicks, Javier Assad, Dodgers, Rockies, James Paxton, Cal Quantrill, and Brewers, Angels, Carlos Rodriguez, Jose Soriano. And that is a look at those that shall reside on the bump. Boom. 10 of 11, 9 of 10. Is that right? That's what you told me?
Yes, I believe that's correct. Might have 2 losses in that stretch, but I'll tell you what. We win tonight with David Peterson on the hill in Texas. This is a thing. This becomes a real thing. Because David Peterson, no good. Bet the over on the Rangers team total tonight.
Well, I like it. We're getting bets out there in the nick of time. All right, I'll bet the over on the team total for the Rangers. It's Paul Skeens Day. I bet every Paul Skeens start, and I usually take the over on whatever the strikeout number is. But lately, I think they've started to figure out that he's good. So, like, that strikeout number will be 8.5 or something, and you're like, I don't know if I can do 8.5.
And then the opponent's like, screw it, I'm swinging early in the count. First pitch I see, I'm hacking at it.
Yeah, you can't get down in the count. All right, Tommy, goodbye. I'll talk to you later. Everybody else, have a wonderful evening. Enjoy the baseball. We'll talk to you on a Lawn Maintenance Tuesday. Peace.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. From roof repair to emergency plumbing and more, done well. So the next time you have a home project, leave it to the pros. Get started at Angie.com.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.